my God, what a great song. Hour number two. Trey's not here. He's at a beach wedding in Mexico. I'm not even going to try to recreate any intros that he does because they're so fantastic. They need to stand on their own. We hope they have a great time at the wedding. He'll be back on Wednesday of next week. And just to mention it, for an artist that Trey loves so much, Trey loves him more than anybody I know. Kevin would probably be next. Maybe I'm third. We all love Gary Clark Jr. If you have not heard the Black and Blue album, it's fantastic. But that song right there, which would be, that's Bright Lights, Big City, I believe. Wow. What a great song. The patience in that song. The patience to wait and let things breathe and go. It's such a good song, man. Gary Clark Jr. Just incredible. Incredible. So hopefully you're having a great musical Friday. We are. Because we're jamming some Weird Al. Most people don't say it that way, but that makes me extra nerdy that I say we're jamming Weird Al. It is his birthday today, so you will hear some Weird Al. Sam's weird. I'm weird. No, you know some of you are weird, so we're going to embrace the weird. People have already been giving us ideas. Somebody wanted White and Nerdy, and you know there's a Weird Al song you like. There is. Because I'll put him in the same category as I would put, say, even like the Beatles. You don't hate everything. There's no way the whole catalog drives you crazy. There's something in there that you like. I'd forgotten about Living with a Hernia, right? I mean, if you never know. Like a surgeon, that might be your thing. You never know. I'll prove it right now. I bet Dustin McComas has one. Here we go. Let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline and talk to Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. Dustin, what Weird Al Yankovic song would you play for the aliens?
Ooh, I've got a couple that I always think of when I think of Weird Al. First is it Amish Paradise?
Yes.
You know, after Coolio's Gangsta's Paradise. And then Headline News, which is built off of that Crash Test Dummy song.
Oh, right. Yep.
And, like, that's one of my favorite songs to play at jukeboxes just to kind of, like, drive people stuck in your head. So I love that Weird Al had his own parody of that as well.
He's a great example. That's a good example of a song. I hate the original song, but I love his cover. Like, his parody is great, even if I can't stand the original song.
You're right. Yeah, like, I don't like the original song. I just enjoy how much people don't like the original song. But, yeah,
right.
I would prefer the Headline News version to the Crash Test Dummies.
Exactly. All right, Dustin, I guess there are some that would say the Longhorn football team has been a little Crash Test Dummy-like in a lot of ways these last couple weeks. So how much do you buy what Tom Herman, Sam Ellinger, and other players and coaches are selling? How much do you buy the week off was good, catharsis, good hitting, the ones-on-ones, we got some good work done, all that stuff. How much do you buy it for tomorrow?
Not much of it, really, to be brutally honest. We've kind of heard these things before. We heard these things heading into the Oklahoma game. And the problem is you hear those things, then you hear some of the other quotes from Sam Ellinger and Taquan Graham about, you know, the distractions of the issues off the field or after the game or whatever it is. And it's interesting because this team doesn't have an effort issue, I don't think. Yeah, you can find individual plays in certain games where a guy just – wasn't going 100%, but you can find those in any college football game. Generally speaking, the Longhorns have played hard. They've competed. You know, you don't play the three straight close games that they've played in the Big 12 if you're not playing with some level of effort. The problem is you know, the discipline, the valuing winning above everything else, you know, the execution, the same sorts of issues we've seen with costly penalties and that sort of thing. Those things haven't changed. So it's hard for me to buy that, you know, this isn't at least a partially fractured program and that this was, you know, production of practice reps was at an all-time high when we haven't seen that in games. And, oh, by the way, you still got two players this week talking about how there's distractions that are affecting the locker room.
Yeah, and that concerned me a little bit. I think it was Taquan Graham is the one I heard when it was like, I thought this was behind us. I thought this was over. I mean, these guys, Dustin, you know, probably thought that July was closing the door on this thing and they could get to football. They're having enough trouble with the football part. The idea that they might actually have to sort of, you know, rabbit ear the situation and think, oh man, what are the fans going to boo me if I walk off the field? Man, this of all the teams that doesn't need that, this team does not need that.
Right, exactly. You know, they have their own issues on the field in Big 12 play and trying to compete with the championship on its own. And yeah, I think you're seeing, you know, it's something. And I know this guy hasn't won like people kind of expected at Texas, and Texas fans have their opinions. But, you know, Shaka Smart talks all the time about just trying to get guys to play with a clear mind. And you can see it. You can see it in basketball, and I think you're seeing it in the football right now with this team, that there are a lot of cluttered minds out there, I think, for whatever reason. And I don't think you see many guys that are just at that level to where they go out on the field and that's all they're thinking about and that's all they're concerned about is, you know, doing their assignments, winning, and playing with that maximum effort and just valuing winning as much as anything else or more than anything else at that time. They don't have enough of those guys. And it's something that Sam Ellinger talked about directly heading into the Oklahoma game is, you know, the discipline aspect and, you know, having a conversation with people about valuing winning at that extreme level. So, yeah, it's, you know, you look at this team on paper heading into the season, you're like, okay, this should be a team that competes for the Big 12 championship, but it wasn't Alabama's roster or Clemson's roster or coming off of a year where, you know, you're playing for the Big 12 championship last year. They were going to have their issues and questions they had to answer on the field. Now you throw in this whole other element that you've got players admitting to on the record. And yeah, I think you can see that spill over on the field on Saturday.
Yeah, we'll see if they can get past all of that. Talking to Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com. Dustin, I always say blocking and tackling to me is like liking and trusting your wife. If you don't have one of those things, it's a problem. If you don't have both of them, you're in big trouble. What bothers you more right now? What concerns you more going into the Baylor? Forget about everybody else on the schedule. What concerns you more for tomorrow, the blocking or the tackling?
That's a great question. Probably the blocking, because I think that if we look at this Texas team right now, we understand that the offense is more of a strength than the defense. And you need that offense to be able to perform at the level that the highest level that it can. So keeping Sam Ellinger comfortable, confident in the pocket, establishing some sort of running game, that to me is the more concerning thing, because you can deal with the defense giving up some points in some plays if that offense is functioning at a really high level. And it just can't do that if we see the type of pass protection that we saw against the Oklahoma game, and we see the lack of run game again. It's just going to be an issue for that offense, which is crazy to say considering how many points they've scored this season. But we know watching them that they haven't clicked. I mean, that second half against Oklahoma, I mean, how long did it take to get a first down, and Sam Ellinger's comfort level and the confidence level? You saw some of that against TCU as well. So that concerns me, because there was a point after the first three games where the offensive line was slowly starting to trend in the right direction. You're starting to see some encouraging performances individually, and you're starting to see a group kind of come together. And then Oklahoma happened, and it's like it went in reverse and quick. So that's a bigger concern for me heading into this Baylor game.
Obviously, a couple guys want to clear their heads in a lot of ways. A lot of guys do, but I'm assuming Keyonte Ingram and Jake Smith would love to clear the deck of a couple things. Jake had the big drop against Oklahoma. Obviously, Keyonte's had multiple fumbles. Where's your confidence level on those two guys getting past it? But also, where's your confidence on Tom Herman and Yurcich allowing them to do it? Like, to me, they need to be schemed into this game. You can't avoid them. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, if Jake Smith is healthy, he has got to be a big, big part of that game plan, especially with Jordan Whittington dealing with an issue again. I don't foresee how the Texas offense, you know, when you kind of look at the lack of production from the receivers recently, how how they can win if he's not involved at least significantly on that side of the ball. Ingram to me is a little more interesting deal, because I kind of came away from the Oklahoma game thinking that. I think it's time to see if Bijan Robinson can take on that role as the main guy with that running back group. Because, you know, what's the one thing that, you know, coaches kind of hesitate with those young guys is can they pass protect? And there were back-to-back plays in that Oklahoma game where Oklahoma sent a free blitzer right at Bijan Robinson, and he did the job. And the second time he did the job, he delivered some thump with it right in the middle of that hole. And so you're like, okay, you know, we can have a little more confidence about what he can do. You know, he knows his assignments there. He's not shy from the physicality of pass blocking, and it's kind of that selflessness that goes with that. So I kind of think it's going to be time to see if Bijan Robinson can become a bigger factor in that offense We saw what we did as a receiver later in that game against Oklahoma. I think he had one of the best runs of the game, kind of turning into something out of nothing, which I guess isn't really saying much because Texas really didn't run the ball well. But he looks like he has the confidence, the awareness, the physicality. You can't ignore Keyonte Ingram, but I think it might be time to see if Bijan Robinson can handle a much more significant workload moving forward.
So, Dustin, taking the Eyes of Texas thing and putting it to the side and just focusing on football, you've obviously got sources you talk to around this program. Clearly things are, you know, pretty dark right now, and there's people believing that Tom Herman is absolutely on a hot seat and all of that. Do you think there's something that can happen tomorrow, though, that would maybe get some of the BBs back in the dustpan and then back in the box and slowly start to walk this back a little bit? Or do you get the sense that it really is too far gone for certain folks?
I don't think it's too far gone, but it's certainly further down the road than I would have anticipated at this point. I think, you know, the way the Oklahoma thing happened, I think really infuriated a lot of people. And it's something that somebody told me a long time ago about the people that end up making the decisions at Texas or heavily influence those decisions is they can handle losing. But when they start feeling embarrassed, that's when things can change. And I think there was a level of embarrassment that followed the loss and just like observing all the issues that are surrounding the football program right now. So it's certainly pretty far down that road. But you never say never, especially during a pandemic, especially with so much season remaining, especially with Texas still having an opportunity to play its way into the Big 12 championship game, as crazy as that sounds. But you kind of look at the landscape and, you know, they're certainly not out of it. They could get hot and play themselves into that game. But if Texas goes out and plays an excellent football game, low penalties, offense clicks, run game gets going, tackling's good, and you know, get some pressure on the quarterback, no special teams blunders. I mean, we're asking a lot, but it's, you know, it's possible it happens. And if that sort of thing happens and everything after the game goes smoothly, yeah, perhaps some of those BBs get back into the box a little bit. But I think this thing is pretty, you know, I think this is kind of far down the road to where I don't know, you know, how many opportunities there are going to be to sway a lot of people's opinion back in the other direction, because it seems like there's already some strong opinions that are being formed.
All right. Now let me bring that the Eyes of Texas ingredient back in because of what you just said. When you say embarrassment after OU, does the Eyes of Texas factor into that embarrassment, or are you just discussing embarrassment football-wise losing to that version of OU?
No, I think the Eyes of Texas does factor into it.
Okay.
The way that kind of went down and the way it went viral, I think certainly does play a part into it because, you know, there's probably people from the outside looking in like, you know, where's the team aspect of this? Where's the leadership? What's going on? Why is he out there and not out there? And why is this guy doing that or whatever? And that follows, you know, issues where you're seeing kind of on the field, those same types of issues in terms of discipline and making the plays and carrying out your assignments and special teams issues and all those sorts of things. So, yeah, I think that's certainly playing a part. Even, I think people would be naive to say if that isn't playing a little bit of a role in terms of just the kind of the fury associated with the program right now.
Yeah, Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com. Last night was Thursday, so that was War Room night at Orange Bloods. Check out the great stuff there. He's at DMcComasOB on Twitter. Okay, Dustin, a couple things I know you're personally connected to. Let's talk Steelers here. Steelers-Titans is massive this weekend. I can't wait for the game. Give me your biggest key. What does Pittsburgh need to do to stay undefeated?
I never thought I'd really be saying this, but, you know, play action in Ryan Tannehill, they've unlocked him in Tennessee. And I think that, you know, statistically, he's got to be one of the better play action passing guys in the NFL. And, of course, it's helped by the fact that you got Derrick Henry hanging out back there a lot and what he can do in the run game. I'm not really worried about the Steelers' run defense. I think that they're going to be good there, although the Devin Bush loss is certainly going to be something to keep an eye on for the Steelers. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to run the ball against the Steelers consistently, even though Derrick Henry can handle that physical workload and all those sorts of things. For me, it's, you know, third down, when you have an opportunity to get Ryan Tannehill on the ground, get a hit on him, make those types of plays. Don't give up the big plays down the field and the play action and that sort of thing. If the Steelers can do that, I feel pretty good about their chances. They looked really sharp offensively against Cleveland, and I don't think that's a terrible Cleveland defense. I mean, with the way Claypool is playing, mm-hmm. they get the run game going some. The offensive line is healthy now. They're kind of starting to click a little bit on that side of the football. So I feel pretty confident that they're going to put up some points and kind of keep that offense on the field to some extent. But really, for me, it's all about stopping Ryan Tannehill in that play-action passing game, because if they get that going and they start hitting some chunk plays and he keeps some plays alive with his feet, makes some throws down the field, then you start to open up the running game a little bit, and that's really when Tennessee is at their best. And that's a lot of what they were doing against Houston as well, and one of the reasons why they made the deep playoff run last year that they did.
I'm wondering, too, how you make great points there about the offense and why Tannehill may be the focus. I wonder how the Luan missing on one side, Bush missing on the other side plays out, because that's the same, you know, the same guys out on the field. I wonder who ends up with the advantage there. One other thing, you mentioned Claypool. You watch the Steelers closer than anybody I know. I love that more NFL teams are going with jet sweeps inside the 10. I think it's brilliant. They do it with Claypool. Have the Steelers ever really done that in your time watching them? Like even with, I don't know, Cordell Stewart or somebody, where they're running those jet sweeps? Because I think it really opens the offense up when they get tightened up inside the 10.
Yeah, it's a great wrinkle, and I can't recall them using that type of look. They used to get Antoine Randle, Ellen Hines, Ward involved. But I think that was more direct snap type thing, given those guys' quarterback background. You kind of had to account for the fact that they could actually throw the football. Especially with a guy like Hines Ward, he wasn't the burner that Claypool was, kind of coming around that jet sweep type look. And yeah, I can't recall them really using that sort of element with the offense, but you're right. I'm kind of surprised more people don't do it down there in the red zone. It's hard to account for that kind of speed if you're kind of chasing that guy. You know, if you get a pre-snap look to where, okay, we might have a man situation there, and you got a guy that's chasing Claypool, that's tough. It's tough to get to him when he hits that corner, and he's only got about 8 to 10 yards to cover before he's in the end zone. And we know how things can get condensed down there, but we know, too, how much man defense that teams typically play down there as well. So, yeah, I can't recall them really doing that. They've gotten creative in the past with some of those guys, but probably not in this way. And I'm glad they're doing it because he's blossoming into a big-time receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, he's been really impressive to watch. And also Chasing Claypool, that fifth Kevin Smith movie, fantastic. Great cast, great story. I always love that one. Real quick, Dustin, give me a baseball thought here. Bueller and Morton tonight. I love the matchup. It's obviously a critical game three. You give the advantage one way or the other?
It's tough to pick against Charlie Morton. I think, to me, the most interesting thing about this pitching matchup is, you know, Walker Buehler, the blister issue. When he's right, he's throwing a lot of cutters. And I think his last start was the most cutters he's thrown in a long time. So that could be a positive sign about, hey, the blister is feeling better. He could be closer to being his true self again on the mound. And if he is, we know this is a Tampa Bay lineup that will strike out a lot. But man, Charlie Morton in the postseason, that's a guy that kind of lives for these types of moments. And he looked really good in his last start against Houston. I think this is going to be a kind of a tight eighth or ninth inning kind of game. And, you know, I think that if you look at these bullpens, Tampa Bay perhaps might have a little bit of an advantage there. But you look on the other side at those bats that the Dodgers have, who they can bring off the bench, whether it's Jock Peterson if he's not in the lineup, or Kiki Hernandez if he's not in the lineup, Edwin Rios. I mean, they've got some dudes on that bench that can come in and give you a great at-bat. So I think it's going to be a tight, really, really competitive game. And I think this is when this World Series will kind of trend towards a lot more closer, maybe lower scoring types games as these pitchers get going and these teams get a feel for each other.
Yeah, that's what I need, Dustin. I know it makes me an old man. I need a 2-1 or a 3-2 because these first two games have been good, but I don't want a big lead that you have to chase. Give me like a one or two run game. I don't care if it's 10-8. Just give me something that in the fourth inning is still really tight. That's what I'm looking for.
I think you're going to get that tonight. And now that I say that,
it's going to be 10-5. Yeah.
If you're listening, it's going to be like, 8-3 in the third inning. But yeah, I think you're going to get that tonight with these two guys on the mound.
Should be a lot of fun. A whole lot of sports going on right now. And Dustin McComas covers it all and can talk about it all. That's why we get him on each Friday. Check out orangebloods.com as we get ready for the Baylor game at DMcComasOB on Twitter. Dustin, enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the games, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Chad, have a good weekend. Take care.
Oh, the man's going to have his terrible towel out this weekend. I know he's going to be doing what my wife's going to be doing, is grinding out every single drive, every possession, every run, every pass. That is such a good game. Noon on Sunday. I know you Cowboy fans will be watching. Cowboys in Washington. Texans fans, again, you're not on in the Austin area. Please find a way to watch that game. But also, please peek in to Pittsburgh, Tennessee. That is going to be so much fun. Four winning matchups over the weekend in the NFL. I'll hit some of those, give you more thoughts on Pittsburgh, Tennessee. Plus, we've had games moved because of COVID-19. We will double-check all of that. And coming up at 1:45, I hadn't even asked him yet. You got some Am I the A-hole today? Sam Pika?
Stories today.
Stories?
Stories.
What, like, what does that mean? What do you normally have? You don't normally have stories?
We got, like, news, weird happenings in the world.
Oh, so it's not Am I an A-hole? This is just regular stuff.
Correct.
All right, Sam Pika running Where Are We At in Society. He will let us know where society is today, coming up at 1:45. Then I'll talk to Rod Babers, talk some football, maybe a little Eyes of Texas. I got to tell him about my Eyes of Texas epiphany and see what he thinks of it at 2:05. And at 2:30, why October the 23rd and 24th, we'll throw tomorrow in, will matter, including some great birthdays and a couple of big national days, including something that I still own that many of you probably don't. This is The Horn.
Your butt is wide. Well, mine is too. Just watch your mouth or I'll sit on you.
Oh, my God.
The word is out.
Oh.
Better treat me right.
This was one of the best.
Because I'm the king of cellulite.
The reason Weird Al parodying Michael Jackson was so great is because of how seriously Michael Jackson took himself, to me. This video was long form like Thriller, and it took forever. And then Al's first version was long form like that, too. God, it was funny. When that dude said, yo, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, yo. I lost it.
Eat this. It's good for you. Oh. He hands him like a double cheeseburger.
Oh, you ain't fat. You ain't fat. You ain't nothing. Oh, so good. Weird Al is 61 years old today. When they were back out on tour, I think he would even actually put on like a fat suit to do fat every single night. I always try to imagine what those shows were like, man, to do those kind of parodies, the level of musicianship it takes. All through the years, you're picking songs that are popular at the time and recreating them. It's great stuff. Go check out some Weird Al today if you want to get in a little weird mood. A lot of good stuff coming in on the Specs text line today. This one comes from somebody that maybe thought I wouldn't read it, but let's read it. This says, my grandpa has been a Longhorn fan all his adult and especially his adulthood, and especially because of Mr. Campbell. He has removed his UT items throughout the house. Oh, no. Not because of the song, but because of how white people have treated the players because they are offended by the song. He has said, I fought for them to have that right. And I hope, and I'm just typing back that I did mention that part of it. The biggest, one of the points that I brought up today is not keeping score, because I think that is a bad part. I don't think anybody needs to go to the game tomorrow and count players, because I will again ask the question, do you really care what somebody is doing during a song? Now, obviously there are extreme versions. If someone's yelling in your face during a song, if someone's striking you during a song, throwing things at you during a song, yeah, you don't want that. But outside of that, people have gotten mad at me. People got mad at me during the national anthem discussion when I said, I just don't care what you do during a song as long as you leave me alone. In this case, it's your school song. You have the pride, but you need to be willing to do it together and disagree together. Because to me, that's what's in the Longhorn DNA. You guys are so great at that. You're great at being real. You don't let the traditions get too crazy. You latch onto what you need to latch onto, but you don't take it too seriously. So if Longhorn A wants to stand there, throw up the hook'em horns and sing the Eyes of Texas, they should be able to do that. And it doesn't make them anything but a Longhorn. And if a person wants to go back to the locker room, go buy another hot dog, or be in their car driving away when the Eyes of Texas is played. They have that right, too, because they're a Longhorn, and that's all that really matters. Come on. Every one of you listening right now has the right to be wherever you want during the Eyes of Texas. You beat the traffic? I'm not judging you. Matthew's not judging you. Do we judge Matthew because he leaves the suite? No, I don't care. If Matthew McConaughey is not in his suite when the Eyes of Texas is... Are you mad at Matthew? No. You're going to want to go. You're going to go home. You're going to watch Dallas Buyers Club, and you're going to go, my God, he's great. Because he's a Longhorn. He's one of your people. He's one of yours. Embrace him. Put your arm around him. That's what's key. And that's what I think we need to see tomorrow. All I need is two players. I don't care who they are. I need one player throwing up a hook 'em horns and singing the Eyes of Texas, and I need the other player standing there respectfully, either locking arms, throwing up a fist. They could even be kneeling. Kneeling, not kneeling, Chad. Yes, even kneeling. They just need to both be together as Longhorns expressing themselves during the Eyes of Texas. Show the basic respect, because I don't think CDC's wrong there. Show the fans you love them, even though the fans shouldn't care, shouldn't keep score, again. But let them do whatever they want to do. Let them do. No, there's no mandate for anybody. People that are getting mad, there should be a mandate. You should make them stop. They don't make you do anything. Chris Del Conte does not say to the guy in the third row, I mean, yeah, Mac Brown tried, right? Come early, be loud, stay late, wear burn orange. He's not mad at you if you're walking to your car during the Eyes of Texas. Come on, man. I hate hearing a story like that. Somebody that worships Earl Campbell, and he's mad at the fans for being mad at the players. All this can come together. All of it can come together. Just got to open those minds up, have the conversation, be willing to see the other side. You can do this. Longhorn fans, I promise you, you can do this. I've been observing you for years, and I love you for this quality. You can't be fooled. Sometimes you're too realistic, but this is a time to be realistic. Put the Eyes of Texas under examination. I think it will pass the test, and I think you can get past it. All right, let's talk a little NFL Week 7 right after I remind you that we will have 10:30 on the pregame tomorrow for Texas and Baylor. Longhorn Game Day brought to you by Coors Light. Bucky and I will be right here in the studio checking it out. Also, for you high school football fans, remember a couple things. Flex ATX is out there. FlexATX.com, FLXATX.com. It's live. It is your new home for everything Central Texas high school sports. And once again tonight, we fire up the ABC Home and Commercial Services High School Football Radio Network. Remember, each and every week that they have games. You got Lake Travis on 104.9, Vandegrift on 101.9 and AM 1260, Bowie on the Bat 105.3. Plus, get the app, The Horn Austin, in your app store, and you can click on all kinds of other teams. We're up to like 11 or 12 teams this year. Teams like McNeil and Vista Ridge and Westwood and others that you can follow through the IHS Fan webcast network. You can also stream everything live at hornfm.com or on the Horn app. So if you love your love your high school football like you love your college and pro football, just keep it right here on the Horn and hit that Horn app. We have a lot of things for you to enjoy. All right, so NFL Week 7. We got a couple things that have moved around in case you didn't hear, and this will affect that Sunday night game. Some people are a little confused by what they did. It makes sense to me on just one simple level. So ESPN, NBC has the Sunday night game, right? This week, that game was Tampa Bay and Vegas. But NBC only has one crew. So what they wanted to avoid was, well, we don't want to send our crew to a game that can't happen. We have to have this. This is the biggest NFL game every week. So what they did was they switched the game to a game that they are more certain is going to happen. So Seattle, Arizona now becomes the Sunday night game. Tampa and Vegas will move to 3:05. The Raiders have had issues on their offensive line with COVID-19. Here's the weird thing about contact tracing and all that. One guy tested positive, but since those other guys are in such close contact, they are doing contact tracing and they're doing extra testing. Now, what we hope will happen is that tests will come back negative on, I think it's either tomorrow or maybe it's even Sunday morning, kind of late in the game. But I believe the NFL standard is you have to have 8 offensive linemen to play. And right now the Raiders would have 5. So just keep your eyes peeled for that one, but that's why they moved those ball games. A lot of great games this weekend, of course, around these parts. It's Cowboys and Washington. Cowboys have to win this game. There is no other way to talk about it. There's no other way. There can't be a, well, the pressure on Dalton. I know. We talked about it. Zach Martin's probably not playing. And Cameron Irving is probably filling in at left tackle. I don't care. Andy Dalton has to win this game. Has to. Ezekiel Elliott has to not fumble. You can't not hand him the ball. You got to trust him. He's got to get over that thing. And you have to win this game. You must sweep Washington. You must sweep the Giants. And then you got to hope you can split with Philly. Philly looked all right last night. They're definitely the best team right now in the division, not just by record, but they definitely feel that way. So that's the Cowboy game. Texans game, oh, good Lord. Aaron Rodgers coming to town off of an ass-kicking. That is going to be rough. And that Texans defense does not cover well. I think the Texans offense might be their best defense in this game. Grind it out, keep the ball, work the clock, try to find a running game, let Deshaun Watson make some plays. Getting a lead would be a good idea, because if Aaron Rodgers gets that swagger about him, look out. That is a noon game. And again, not in the Austin area. Please get out to your Pluckers, Cover 3, or wherever you go to watch that game. Because if you have the commercial version of NFL Sunday Ticket, they get it. You don't if you have it at the house. But the biggest game, now there are, I mentioned Seattle, Arizona, mentioned the Tampa Bay game with the Raiders. Those are winning matchups of winning teams. Monday night is one. We'll talk about that obviously on Monday with Chicago and the Rams. A little bit of a surprise both ways, I think. 5-1 Bears, 4-2 Rams so far. And remember, one of the anomalies of the season is that if you are pumping up an NFC West team, that's okay. They're certainly a good division. Just remember, they get to play the whole NFC East this year. So go double-check that schedule and see how many of those wins you're giving them credit for are against NFC East teams. Just saying. But the other game, of course, is Pittsburgh and Tennessee. This one fascinates me on multiple levels. We mentioned it earlier. Taylor Lewan is out, the left tackle of Tennessee. How does that balance with Devin Bush being out for Pittsburgh? Pittsburgh's defense is nasty. Plus, I heard a great stat today, Bill Barnwell on SportsCenter throwing it out, that Derrick Henry with Lewan as his left tackle is up over 5 yards per carry average. But when he's not on the field, it drops down below 4. Maybe even down to like 3.3, 3.4, somewhere in that range. So watch that. But then the other thing is, this is referendum time on Ryan Tannehill. The fantasy players would tell you Ben is worse on the road than he is at home. Maybe even don't play him if he's on the road. So things can get shaky. Can Ryan Tannehill, Dustin McComas just mentioned it earlier in the hour, that play-action pass game they like to run, he gets on the move. A.J. Brown helping him out and other guys. Can they make big plays? Can they make enough plays with Tannehill? Because their last game, you can argue, watching that game, they didn't win that game because of Derrick Henry. He was all right. They won the game because of Tannehill. He had a 94 rating, something like that. It was crazy. And look, I know Ryan Tannehill as well as anybody. I'm an Aggie. I'll tell you, those ups and downs happen. Are we going to get done on Sunday and think, oh, there it is again, roller coaster Ryan Tannehill, the bad version showed up, or will he step up, bow up, and have a huge game against Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers? Can't wait to see that one. Pittsburgh at Tennessee is a noon kick. I can't wait to watch it. All right, speaking of something I can't wait for, always excited about Sam Pika taking a look at our society and trying to figure out what the hell's going on with it. Where are we at in society with Sam Pika coming up? Then I'll talk to Rod Babers at 2 o'clock. I'll tell him about my Eyes of Texas epiphany if he missed it earlier. Plus, I want to talk to him about this Longhorn offense, this Longhorn passing game. Where the heck did it go? Because I thought I saw it against UTEP. Now I don't think it's there at all. We'll talk about it on the Horn.
I saw the little wren sitting there on a log. I asked him his name, and in a raspy voice he said, Yoda.
Yoda.
Y-O-D-A, Yoda.
There's the other
Yoda,
thing.
Yoda.
He's a nerd. Star Wars stuff. The one he did about Anakin with American Pie. I mean, my God. It's happy birthday to Weird Al Day. Weird Al is 61. Little Dwight Yoakam, 64. And oh, by the way, if you are an Austin area golf freak, and this name might matter to you, today would have been Harvey Penick's birthday. Harvey would have been 116. He died back in 1995. The connections with Ben Crenshaw, the connections with Tom Kite, Ben Crenshaw winning the Masters and bending over crying. General Ben, if you're still out there, brother, if you're listening today, God, that was a great moment. I'm sure 500 people are going to mention that to you between now and, like, you know, next year's Masters, and we hopefully have it in the springtime. But that's so good. Happy birthday to Harvey Pinnick. I still have a little Harvey Pinnick training. I took the Harvey Pinnick Academy when I worked at Golfsmith, and then every time I'm around the green, I think of Harvey Pinnick saying, putt when you can. Just putt when you can. That's the number one rule. Putt when you can. I grab the putter in all kinds of situations. Doesn't always work, but I will at least grab the putter. All right, let's see if we can fix society with Sam Pica. Here we go.
Where are we at in society today?
Where are we at in society? Brought to you by Lynch Plumbing, commercial and residential services. When you're in a pinch, call Lynch, 512-450-3416. Online, lynchplumbingtx.com.
Shout out to Lynch Plumbing. Glad to have him on the show. I'm not sure if any of them are related to George Lynch of Dokken, but if they were, that'd be cool. What do you got, Sam?
So I got a couple stories for you today, so that way we can see exactly where the people are at in society.
Okay, story time, where society's working today. Okay.
So the first one, I need to set the scene a little bit, because I want to ask you a question first, right?
Okay. All right.
So we're sitting here, show's going on, yep. like it is now,
yep.
And I insult you. I say, Chad, you have a tiny pee-pee, whatever it is, whatever wow. it is to hurt your heart.
I can't believe you'd go there. How rude.
And just for some reason in that moment, you have had enough. You snap,
yep.
and a rage fills your heart, and you decide that there's only one form of retribution that will satisfy you in this instance.
Okay.
Murder.
Wow. That's serious. You're saying I decide to take your life?
Yes.
Okay.
What do you grab in that room to do it?
Oh, in this room right now?
In that room right now, with what you have at your disposal, what do you come at Sam Pica with?
Probably one of those bats.
Okay, honestly, I didn't see the bats. That's a good choice.
The bat, yeah, I can see a bat rack here. One of them's plastic, but I'm sure like two or three of those are actually wood. There's a nice long one with some autographs on it. I think it's a legit Louisville slugger. I think that's where I'd go.
Well, we got a cheeky git from across the pond who might be a little proud of you today, Chad.
Okay.
When faced with not one, but two terrorists on London Bridge.
Whoa.
It's a real thing. Brandishing knives and bomb vests, which were later found to be fake by officials, our hero of the day, Stephen Gallant, jumped into action, finding the nearest tool he could find to defuse the situation. A 5-foot-long narwhal tusk.
Wow!
Being used as a wall decoration on a nearby building's wall.
Oh my God, he ripped a narwhal tusk off a wall?
He ripped...
And stabbed a dude with it?
Stabbed two dudes with it like a spear.
Did he kill him?
Yes, he killed both these terrorists, suspected terrorists.
Wow.
And so I didn't know that narwhal tusks could get 5 feet long.
Yeah, they can get long. I didn't quite know that they were that long.
Apparently they get longer. They can get like 9 feet.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, they can get like 9 feet long, bro.
Wow.
And so he gets these two guys with the narwhal tusk. And obviously, British laws are a little different than ours, Chad.
Okay.
Because this man was facing some serious prison time for these murders. So I guess even though they were terrorists, or, you know, they had proposed themselves as terrorists, they were threatening people and whatnot.
Right. He thought it was a threat.
Exactly. Yeah. I guess the general rule is you're supposed to wait for the cops to take care of it okay. in England.
Right.
Even in that situation. But our friend, the Queen herself, has spoken up to issue the first royal pardon in 7 years for our boy Steve.
Wow. You know what, Steve? I think Steve needs to not only get that, I think Steve might need to get the old knighting. I do.
I think he's going to get... Does she do the knighting with the tusk?
Yes. I think she needs to do the touch on the shoulders with the narwhal tusk, because that's pretty cool. That is pretty cool, man. First off, to do it is one thing, but I'm just going to guess if a narwhal tusk is mounted on a wall, it's not just like a couple of, you know, like brackets that I could literally... They don't let people carry that around.
Yeah, right.
It was somehow affixed to that wall, so he had to like rip out... concrete glue or whatever they used and then stab them both to death? Man.
Steve is hard, bro. That's what we're saying.
You go, Steve. Sorry, Sir Steve. I'm going to knight you right now. That's awesome.
All right, next up, we got... So I don't know if you know this, Chad.
Okay.
But we live in the future.
Okay.
We have made it 5 years past the Back to the Future year.
Oh, yeah,
of
yeah
the
that's
future.
Right.
We have tiny computers that we carry around in our pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And now, as of this week... We have robots that can drive into our buttholes.
Wow. I'm so glad that's where this ended up.
So
do I want to know
So scientists at Purdue University have developed microscopic robots that are the size of a few human hairs.
Wow.
In order to deliver drug payloads to specific parts of the body.
Really?
So they essentially said it's like when people are walking around in an airport, mm-hmm. that's how we take drugs now. Or, you know, medicines, whatever. They say drugs because they're pharmaceutical, whatever. But right. that's how we take drugs now. They said essentially that this is the equivalent of walking around an airport on one of those little moving sidewalks.
The people mover.
You know, it's going yeah. faster. You're going faster. You're
yeah.
moving through people.
Okay.
So they have these tiny little, like I said, a couple, the size of a couple human hair robots that basically backflip through your colon using electromagnetism.
Okay.
Turns it all the way up you, and they follow it along your insides with ultrasound technology.
Uh-huh.
And once it gets to where it needs to go, that's when they drop it off.
And they can take care, and they put the drugs where it needs to go.
Yeah, and they just put it directly to where it needs to go. There's no there's no transporting, there's no nothing. And apparently
wow.
it makes the drugs a lot more effective, too.
Well, sure.
So they work a lot better and a lot faster.
So this is something where I would go in to, like, have surgery, right? They knock me mm-hmm. out and do this?
Yes, you would be out when they do it.
I would hope.
Dinging.
That's one of the robots right now.
Yeah,
are you having a procedure as we're talking?
No, this is all personal pleasure. This is
you're just doing a test run?
Yeah.
That's fantastic, man. I love science so much. I love the developments and stuff like that. The fact that that's a real thing and it can help people out. Because that was the old thing about aspirin, right? People would be like, well, where are the aspirin? Nowhere to go. How does the aspirin know to go to your head? Or how does it know to go to your foot or your hand or whatever? So the fact that they can localize it like that, that's incredible.
I'm wondering how far off we are now from being able to shrink down submarines and just do it ourselves. Because that's what I'm shooting for.
Right. Get a little capsule and then you go.
Yeah,
and
the old cartoon kind of.
Well, what about this? Then, like, nowadays they have, like, sutures and, you know, you get stitches or whatever where the sutures just melt.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if I get my head cut open, they could literally staple up my head, but then the staples just dissolve. So what happens with these robots? I need to go in with the procedure, then they have to get the robots to come out?
They or come back out. They walk them back down. So that's the thing, is they were saying
they
on the...
Walk them
they walk them
they
back down.
They march them out the southern exit.
Same way they came in, bro.
That is awesome. Okay, just making sure. So I don't walk out of there with the robots inside.
Oh, no.
The robots will... exit.
I imagine these robots are incredibly valuable. You are not taking these things home.
And then the next logical question would be, what is the process for the next person that needs this done? Do they get their own sterilized robots, or are these robots reused? They've got to be super expensive. What do you do with them?
I feel like they got to be sterilizing them. Like, you're not going to get your own set. It's going to be like a hospital tool.
Because I haven't had the colonoscopy yet, but if I go in for a colonoscopy, I'm assuming the equipment that they are using on some level has been used on another person, right?
A colonoscopy? Is that the one where he gets his finger up in you and he...
Well, no, that's a prostate exam.
Oh,
I'm saying
okay.
The colonoscopy where they take a camera and they go up in there and they check your colon.
Oh, that's even worse.
So... I'm assuming that when that's, like, I'm sure parts of it they can make, like, they could put some kind of covering on it or something that's specific to me. But if there are robots going inside my body and then they come back outside my body and, like, Brad Kellner is waiting out in the waiting room for his robot procedure, Brad Kellner don't want my robots, does he?
He doesn't have a choice, bro.
What are they going to do? Are they spray cleaning my robots and then... You know, then Brad hits the table, or does he get new robots?
I mean, this year we've made leaps and bounds in sanitization technology,
uh-huh.
So I'm sure they got something for you, bro. They're not gonna have you be get your germs up in somebody
yeah.
else.
That'd be my first question. I would want to have them walk me through all of that first. What happened before me, and then I'm worried about those people coming in after me. They don't need that. That's cool, though. I love it. I love science, man. I love all the stuff that they can do. God love all you doctors out there, all you people on the front lines trying to figure out this corona, this COVID-19 coronavirus vaccine and everything. There's a crew over at A&M with help from UT people. The House Divided crew is trying to fix it. There's like four or five others, I think, that are trying to get vaccines ready to go. Hopefully that will happen sometime in 2021 or as soon as possible. Best of luck to all those people. And it's not always luck, right? They gotta follow the science, but hopefully they can get some stuff done pretty quickly. There's Sam Pica, and where are we at in society? All right, coming up next, Rod Babers of the Triple Option and the Longhorn Blitz podcast. We'll talk a little eyes of Texas, but I want to talk a lot of Texas football with him. What does he think we're going to see tomorrow afternoon? We will get into it on the Horn.